are here this morning, joined by a couple of guests from the upcoming play, Murder on the Orient Express. And we have Tim Bangle, who is the director. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing really well. Thank you.
Okay. And Steve Hammond, who plays the lead, Hercule Poirot, in this play. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. So let's start with just the basic details. If people want to go see Murder on the Orient Express on stage in Sandpoint, where and when and how?
Well, we open next Friday, September 15th, and we have shows on the 15th and 16th, and then the following week, the 22nd and 23rd, all shows start at 7 p.m. Tickets are $25 at lporep.com.
Okay. Show starts at 7 p.m., is that what you said?
Yes,
so,
sir.
Okay, so doors open probably at 6:30 or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
And you're at the Panada.
Yes, ma'am.
Right down the street. In the big theater, not the little theater.
The big stage.
The big stage.
We need every inch of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, do you? How's that?
Well, it takes place on a train, right? So we're doing something kind of unique with this production, and in that we are using elements of film during the show. So I'm a filmmaker by passion, but we've incorporated and filmed several of the scenes and different elements of the production so that we could project it on the big movie screen. Mm-hmm. So since the screen's going to be down for the entire show, it kind of limits how much upstage space we can use during the show, and the blocking and the use of the different set pieces that we have planned are going to limit the amount of space that we have access to while we're performing it. So it's by design, it limits, it kind of confines us in what a real train would be. Mm. Mm. So that's what he meant by we need as much space as we can.
I see.
That's cool. A little multimedia presentation.
Yeah.
How do you incorporate that, the film pieces?
Well, the first scene is kind of the background of the entire story that revolves around Daisy Armstrong, the little girl that gets kidnapped and ultimately killed by the head antagonist. So we filmed that entire scene. And we will show that at the opening of the show. And then there's other elements like flashbacks and the actual murder that takes place at the end of the show. We filmed and we'll incorporate that into that last scene.
Oh, cool.
While everybody else is acting on stage. And
yeah,
honestly, I don't know how it must be really challenging to perform both flashbacks and what the characters are experiencing as Perot is interrogating them. You know, doing the whole back and forth. No, I'm this person at the beginning of the show. Now I'm here getting interrogated and being found out. So adding the film element allows the characters on stage to just focus on the present as opposed to what they were doing in the past.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. Must be nice as a performer to have that freedom, or that, I don't know if freedom's the word, but you know, to remove that, barrier. So how did this whole play come about? Were you involved in, like, you know, putting it together from the beginning?
Yeah. So LPO Rep's first show was Young Frankenstein, early 2022, I think it was. And I designed sound for that show. And at the cast party, Keely kind of made a side comment to everybody there that she'd ultimately like to get to the place where she has other directors that come in and help direct shows, because directing every single show is very burdensome on her. So I thought about it and I reached out to her and said, I'd like to do that. I think I can do that. And she said, all right, well, pick a show. So I did some research, and I've never been interested in the thriller or murder mystery genre. But for some reason I was attracted to Murder on the Orient Express. So this show has been on the radar for both Keely and I for about a year and a half now. And here we are.
So it's a book by Agatha Christie first. It's been a couple of movies.
Yeah.
And TV adaptations and stuff.
Yeah.
Do you guys, where did you find your script for it?
I did a search online, and one of the first adaptations that came up was from Ken Ludwig. And that's the one that I liked because of the incorporation of Daisy in the beginning. It also streamlines a lot of the characters. I think the book has 12.
Yeah, the book has 12 passengers, and then in addition to Poirot and the other sort of attendants on the train, I think this has pared that number down to 8. So some of the characters are sort of an amalgam of some of those other what were formerly multiple characters in the book and other adaptations.
Well, that's nice. I mean, that lightens the load a little bit.
So how did you decide, or what was your process for deciding to incorporate film into this?
Well, because I am a filmmaker, reading through the script, it just kind of, I could film that. It wasn't something that I really had to think about. My mind naturally went there. And it works really well. Like the ability to project the flashbacks in the end, and the characters being able to remain in character in the present moment. It's such a powerful scene. There's not a rehearsal that goes by lately that I'm not choked up and teary eyed watching these characters, bring this story to life. And I think the one big change, it's like Murder on the Orient Express is widely known. It's overly done in some regards. Dorothy Prophet is in it. If you're familiar with her and her Cade Prophet production company. And she was like, I don't know if I want to do it because it's so overly done. We can't really do anything different with it. And I was like, challenge accepted. Let's go. One of the biggest changes about our production, or the additions in our production, is the incorporation of Daisy throughout the play. Even though she is dead after scene one, we incorporate a ghostly image of her throughout the show. Because for me, reading the story, it was a love story across all of the characters. Like these 8 characters who are out to murder this guy, they loved that little girl like nothing else. And their love is expressed through the pursuit of justice. And then Steve's character, he loves the law. You know, coming out of World War I, he loves law and order. Not, how would you describe it?
I would describe it as he has a very specific and a passion for order and method and justice. He has a very, very strong moral compass that he takes from his, you know, his time as a police officer in Belgium, the trauma of being displaced from his home country in World War I, and then, his very, strong religious, sort of Catholic upbringing. He has a very, very strict moral compass that he imposes not only on himself, but on everyone else. And so it really puts him to the test.
Yeah. So it to me, it's just really a love story, and using Daisy throughout the show in ways that allow the audience to feel that emotion. It's so incredible to watch.
So are you the person actually behind the camera also?
Yes.
Oh, and what did you film this with?
I filmed it with my Sony FS5 camera that I picked up in film school.
Oh, where'd you go to film school?
I was in Bakersfield, California at the time. So I did an online program through Los Angeles Film School.
Very good. So you're a Valley boy?
No, I'm from here.
Oh, are you?
I was born and raised in Northern Idaho.
Oh, okay.
But I did a stint out of state.
Is this your first time directing a stage production?
Correct.
Yeah. How do you feel like now that it's, well, I guess you're still a week away. So where are you in the process right now? You still got dress rehearsal and stuff to do.
Yeah. We're ready.
I
think we've taken it as far as we can take it in the rehearsal hall. Now we're ready to incorporate the bigger elements of the set pieces and actually seeing the projection I'm playing the video assets on my computer next to us at rehearsals, but it's time to see it on the big screen and have the big sound, and mm-hmm. we're ready to go. We're in really good shape.
Nice. Yeah.
So how many people overall are involved in this production between actors and set workers and directors and all? What's your total?
Well, let me have Steve talk about the cast, if you would, and then I'll chime in on the production team.
So we have a fantastic cast. I think if any stage production is going to be an ensemble cast, it's going to have to be something like Murder on the Orient Express. All of the characters are very, very strong and really challenging in their own specific ways. We have, as Tim mentioned, we have Dorothy Prophet. We have Holly
Beeman.
We have Michael Bigley, Corey Rapace. It's a massive, massive cast. I cannot remember everyone's names. Yeah. I'm terrible with names.
And we have out of the cast, I think we've got about 50% new blood within the company. Oh. We have Mark West, who's playing Ratchet. His daughter is also playing one of the Daisies. Neither one of them have ever performed on stage, and they do a tremendous job. Ashley Schaubrecht, who was last on stage 6 or 7 years ago, came out of hiding for our production. There is Suzanne McLam, who's playing Greta. She's never been on stage here in town, but she's done other performances, and she's even directed and mm-hmm. choreographed plays in the past, so she's got an extensive history.
And she's done some work with LPO backstage before this one.
But
Britt
Hagen, who was last seen in Into the Woods, she was one of the stepsisters. And then I think that's it. We have Estella Simmons, who plays the second Daisy. Mm-hmm. We had three young kids audition for Daisy. One of them backed out for callbacks. Then that left me with two. So I'm like, hey, we got 2 weekends. Why don't each of you take a weekend and we'll call it good.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Sophia West is playing Daisy the first weekend, and then Estella Simmons is playing Daisy the second weekend.
Yeah. Oh, and then we have Myla.
Oh yeah, Myla.
This is her first show in a while, but
other than Speakeasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We take a new approach to McQueen, I think, in that Myla's a woman and she's playing a male part, but we play it like she's a woman dressed up as a man, kind of undercover. And then we reveal her character at the end after the murder happens that she was playing a part the entire time.
Spoilers, Tim. Jeez.
Hey, we want to get people in the seats.
Yeah. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. We're here with Tim Bangle and Steve Hammond. Tim is the director and Steve, the star of the upcoming performances of Murder on the Orient Express, which is live on the Panada stage next weekend and the weekend after that. Where do you start with the material? Like, as far as what's your relationship to it when you found it? Had you read the book before? Were you familiar with the 1970? Whatever four version of the movie, or did you come in kind of cold?
I came in completely cold. I had no experience or previous relationship with the character or with Agatha Christie. Like I said earlier, I was never a fan of murder mystery type stories. And as I approached the story, I knew there was a lot of content out there, and I didn't want to subject myself to it out of fear of potentially copying something.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until maybe 3 weeks ago where I actually started watching the BBC series with David Suchet.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make sure that the approach that Steve and I were taking with his character was on track, and it was good, because both he and I wanted to make sure that we were doing justice to that character out of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I think, David Suchet said it best, as a character, Poirot doesn't doesn't belong to any one production, right? And he is a character that really belongs to the world, and ultimately was the creation of Agatha Christie, and it's an incumbent on anybody who plays him to really to do it right and be as, you know, as authentic as possible.
What was your experience with the, or your previous experience with the character? Have you seen the show and the movies or anything?
So prior to finding out about the show, I think my only real experience with the story had been through the more recent film with Kenneth Branagh. Mm-hmm. But I did a deep dive, and I have read several Poirot books now, and been going through David Suchet's performances. I read his book about playing Poirot, I've been studying French for a while, but I even went so far as to get some lessons from a gal in Brussels to work on my accent to try and get it closer to like a more accurate Belgian French.
Wow. Well, good for you. That's kind of going all out. Can I put you on the spot and ask for some kind of like a line reading or something like that?
Mais bien sûr. Peut-être. Tim, do you have a specific line you would like me to say or read any particular moment?
I think you got it right there, man.
Yeah. Right? Yes. Yes. I apologize. My little guy cells are still waking up. Right?
That's pretty good. What I am familiar with the PBS show, I think, more than anything. Mm-hmm. I can't remember if I saw the Branagh movie or not, but I've seen the older one from the 70s.
Peter Ustinov one.
Yeah. It's pretty good. I like your take on it. He's kind of a fun character.
He is. He is very fun. And working in all of his various little idiosyncrasies has been really a delight during the show. And I keep finding new ways to sort of play with that, I think, at each rehearsal. Hopefully not to the frustration of Tim, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I was just going to say, he's like, in my experience with Poirot, he's both the, you know, he's the protagonist of the story and drives the plot, but he also generally serves as sort of the comic relief too.
He does. He does. He is very funny. And there's an anecdote from David Suchet's book when he was preparing to play Poirot. Mm-hmm. He ended up having lunch with Agatha Christie's daughter and her husband, and it was a very, very, very tense affair. He was hoping it would be sort of lighthearted, sort of like, welcome, you know, thank you for playing. But no, they grilled him with questions. And then one thing that they imparted to him at the end, it was, I think it was specifically referencing the Peter Ustinov performance, was that, you know, it is important to laugh with Poirot, but it is vitally important that we never laugh at him. We only ever laugh with him.
Hmm. So, Steve and I had a conversation not too long ago. Well, I guess it was maybe about a month into rehearsals, where I was like, this is really funny. Is that wrong? You know, we have such a great cast, and a lot of them have such great comedic timing that I asked him, like, well, he asked me too. He's like, what are we doing a comedy or are we doing a thriller? I'm like, well, I think we're kind of doing both. You know, there is some really great comedy in this show and a lot of funny moments, but there's also that thriller tension in it as well, which I think is fascinating as a combination.
Yeah, I think a show like this, we need the comic elements in there. You know, it's a good break for the audience and for the actors, honestly. Otherwise, it would be just a really intense and draining experience, I think.
So yeah,
those comedic elements are much loved and very necessary.
So where do you rehearse for a play? Where do you do a rehearsal?
Well, Keeley rents us an office space out at the Envision Center, the old Coldwater Creek building.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So we spend all of our time out in the main common area out there twice a week. Mm-hmm. And then we've got all our costumes and props and stuff inside the office.
Very good.
For the filmed portions, are people going to recognize Sandpoint landmarks and stuff standing in for other?
No, we didn't film anything outside. The opening scene took place in one of the cast members' homes. Mm-hmm. Because they had some stairs that I liked. And the rest of it is filmed in the Envision Center. We did a lot of green screen work, and the murder element, I added a lot of glow to it to make it seem more ethereal in nature, because from the perspective of Ratchet, he's been drugged, so he's looking at it in a different perspective than would be natural, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So I don't think anybody's going to recognize the locations at all.
The rehearsal, I mean, how long have you guys been working on this, is I guess my question.
I think we did our read through early July.
Yeah.
And then we immediately kicked off rehearsals twice a week.
Wow.
Since then.
Yeah.
Twice a week,
which is pretty light. I mean,
it's very light.
Yeah.
Some of our plays have been three times a week.
Yeah.
Like Into the Woods was definitely three times a week, plus some music.
Yeah.
Rehearsals in there as well. Mm-hmm.
I guess when you share the load across a wide, you know, broader cast, it's other than for Steve, it's kind of everybody just has a little portion of that adds up to a bigger story.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something that, doesn't take as much rehearsal. Yeah. Just a hypothesis.
I don't know. I think everybody in the show has a great deal of content and work and, I don't want to take away from anybody else's work. I honestly feel like, in some respects, I have it easy, in that Poirot doesn't have to hide anything throughout the whole show. Uh-huh. There's no subterfuge on his part.
Yes,
he's very straightforward.
Yeah,
and I am very thankful for that in this process, but. Yeah. Everyone else has, they have multiple angles that they have to approach a character from in any single scene, and it's been really, really it's been tremendous working with everybody on that.
As the director, when you have somebody who's lying in a scene, do you tell them? I mean, how do you inform them, like, you know, hey, you should not be so convincing when you do this, because Poirot has to not believe you or something like that. I imagine it's kind of a tightrope to walk.
Before we started rehearsals, I gave every actor within the eight that commit the crime one word that I wanted them to focus on throughout the show and how to approach their character. Mm-hmm. And that was... that's been pretty much all of the character direction that I've given them. The rest of it, I think, has kind of fallen into place naturally as we've blocked the scenes and worked out the emotional moments through the blocking. I haven't really had to tell anybody how to act. Everybody's just so invested in the project and in enjoying the project that they're doing their homework. They're bringing it.
Yeah. What's your favorite part about directing a stage play instead of,
I can tell you what my least favorite part has been.
Sure.
No. It's not Steve. Mm-hmm. It was making the phone calls at callbacks to tell some people that they weren't going to get the part. Mm-hmm. The films that I've done, I've been able to write roles for everybody who wanted to be part of it. But with this show, I was limited to who I could cast.
Yeah.
And that wasn't so much fun. I think my favorite part has been watching everybody's reactions to the different set pieces and the video elements that we've incorporated into the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I was intentional from the get-go to make sure to post as much of that content or pictures of those pieces to the cast so that they could see the progression and allow them to absorb that and not be surprised come tech week. Oh, here's everything. You know, I wanted them along for the journey as well. Mm-hmm. And it's shown. I think their passion for the project is very evident.
Yeah.
So who are the folks working on set pieces?
Valerie Moore was tasked with set design. She and I have been working closely together since early July or late July. Our main set piece is actually a book, and it's a very large book. It's about 7 feet tall by 10 feet wide when both pages are opened up, and the book serves as our backdrop to each location that we visit within the show. That's been her big task. We projected images that we found online that she liked and traced them out on large pieces of paper, and we've painted them and bound them, and we look forward to seeing it in action next week. It moves, it's mobile, so we'll move it to three different positions on stage depending on the scene. That's really been her big project is the book. Vicky Turnbull is doing costumes. And because we are doing the filming, or we did the filming elements for the show, we were done with costumes weeks ago, which is unusual for a stage production because usually you're still putting things together up until tech week. But she knocked all these costume pieces out because we needed them for the filmed elements. And so, you know, she had a lot of stress the first couple months, but now she's kind of taking it back a breather.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it looks, the costumes are phenomenal.
How are you going to transport that book?
We designed it to be disassembled so that we could reassemble it once we get it into the space.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the audience for the show. Mm. It is a murder mystery. Yeah. Is it, what's the ages that you're looking for? Having in the audience come opening night?
I think teenagers on up. I mean, even younger. It's a kids friendly show. There's only one cuss word in it, and it's not too bad. Mm-hmm. There's no on stage blood. I mean, we've got a dead body that lives on stage for most of the show, mm-hmm. but past that, it's pretty family friendly.
Nice. Well, that's good. That's a relief. The show is, let's see. So you've got Poirot, 8 suspects, and who else is in the, is there anyone else?
We've got Book and, the conductor, Michelle, and then the two kids who play Daisy.
Right.
And then there's a woman, Maddie Patterson, who plays the nanny, which is just, she's just in the film element. She couldn't be as part of the staged element. So she makes an appearance at the very beginning of the show. I think that's about it.
Yeah. Steve, you have a favorite scene, favorite part to perform as
part? Oh, man. Honestly, I think it's hard. Every scene is very, very different. Poirot's approach to each of the different suspects is very, very different and very personal, sort of tailored for each one. Mm-hmm. The denouement of the show is tremendously powerful. Mm-hmm. It's very moving. I think every single rehearsal we've had, I think at least 3 or 4 times we've said like, okay, well, let's go a little easy on it this time. And I don't think there's been a dry eye in the house any time when we finished up.
Yeah. You've been acting not for your whole life, right?
It feels like it sometimes.
Yeah.
the first play I ever did was actually my, my freshman year of high school here at in Sandpoint. I was Reverend Spikes in Marcy Neer's production of Greater Tuna. Mm-hmm. And that was 1999, I think.
I've not heard of this play.
Oh, it's a fantastic show.
It's a hilarious show.
Greater Tuna.
Yeah.
Yes, it's normally just a two-person show about this tiny little kind of podunk town in Texas, and it's really hilarious. It's actually also sort of a murder mystery, it's done through like a series of speeches from all of the very colorful locals. We did a full cast production of it, essentially. But I caught the bug immediately after that, and I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah. Folks who are theater goers in town, any place they might recognize you from?
Some years ago, I can't remember how many years ago now, we did the most recent production of Death of a Small Town in the West. And I was the lead in that. I did Blind Panic by Chris Herron at the Heartwood Center some time ago. I was the spotlight up for Young Frankenstein. And then I was in The Importance of Being Earnest. I was I forgot my character's name. I'm so sorry. I think that's the most recent thing I've done aside from this.
Well, you got Poirot on the brain now.
Yes,
forget about that.
Yeah,
other stuff.
It's too much evidence to keep track of.
Yeah.
Can't keep track of anything else.
As the play goes on, do you probably have less of an emotional journey to go on as the play develops, right? I mean, do you find yourself you not only have to keep track of your excellent Belgian accent, but you have to remember things that you either know or don't know, be surprised by certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's definitely a very emotional journey for Poirot as well. I think the story, it starts with him trying to take a vacation after a very, very difficult case. He is sort of haunted by that somewhat throughout the whole case as it unfolds. And the very, very end of it is a huge challenge to Poirot and really everything that he stands for. So it's very difficult. And it's a very, very emotional, emotional journey.
I think his journey and the way that you're portraying it is, it's similarly rigorous, but in a much shorter time span.
Mm-hmm.
It just all hits home in the last scene. But it's equal impact, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do not remember how exactly it goes. So I don't remember. Is there a moment where you have to, reveal that you have figured it out or something like that?
Oh, yes.
Where you say, aha.
There is, Poirot is very, very, very fond of his walkthroughs of cases.
Right. Yeah,
so, that is really kind of the big moment, when he sort of reveals everything. But there are a couple other moments throughout the show, where we get to see Poirot really, catch somebody in something or make some realizations. But there's some other more sneaky ones that I think we've tucked in there here and there that might induce some folks to maybe want to see it more than once. Maybe they miss a few things on the first pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the thing I was focused on during auditions was were casting people that could carry on the lengthy scenes while maintaining character.
Mm-hmm.
And this cast has done that. Like you could literally watch 8 times and see 8 different performances or 8 different renditions of the show, because each character is that unique and that impactful to the story. They all do something 100% of the time. They're not just sitting idle when it's not their line.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it fun for me. Like I saw, I think 3 or 4 new things last night that they had all incorporated, during the last scene and little bits of character intermixed with the emotion that was going on stage.
Yeah. Tim, as a first time director, did you look to anybody else for guidance? Like, how do I do this? Or
Well,
or how did you figure it out as you went along?
I'm not unfamiliar with directing, you know, directed film, but the stage element was definitely unique. Mm-hmm. Keely asked me a couple weeks ago, like, what's been the biggest difference between the two? And that's really the time I got to spend figuring out the story.
Yeah.
Like with the films that I've directed, I've been able to write them, so I know the stories inside and out. This one I didn't get to write, and I had to kind of dissect it a lot faster than I normally would.
Yeah.
Keely's been, you know, attached to me. I've attached myself to her hip, so to speak. And mm-hmm. There's been, like with the Daisy situation, there was a moment in time where I wasn't sure it was going to work. So I was like, I was picking her brain and, you know, mm-hmm. running some ideas behind her and how to incorporate her into the physical element, because it's a brand new thing.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever done it before, as far as I know. So how do you incorporate a new character in the midst of mm-hmm. everything else that's going on stage and make it and have it make sense?
Yeah.
I've definitely reached out to Keely. I've, you know, Steve and I have talked a couple times about different elements. I talked to Corey and Mila about the Daisy thing as well. As a writer, I've kind of built it into my process to reach out and run ideas by people mm-hmm. and not just isolate myself in a vacuum. And that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Tim Bangle is the director. Steve Hammond is Hercule Poirot. The show is Murder on the Orient Express. We'll give the dates and times and everything one more time. But are we forgetting to ask anything, Carrie? Anything come into mind? Or gentlemen, did we forget to ask you anything about the show?
I would just like to say my curiosity is really piqued, and I plan to come.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah.
Hope to see you.
Yeah. I think it sounds very exciting and fun.
I would like to see this show.
Yeah.
It sounds like you've got enough of a different take on it. Plus, I've never seen it on stage. I don't think I've seen any murder mystery on stage. I think that would be fun to see. So, mm-hmm. should be good. Thank you guys for coming up. Let's do the details one more time. When can people see this, and how do they get tickets and all that stuff? Got that at the top of your... tip of your tongue there, Tim?
Yes, sir. We mm-hmm. open next Friday, September 15th, when we run the 15th, 16th, and then the following weekend on the 22nd and 23rd. Mm-hmm. Tickets are $25 at the door, or you can purchase them now at lporep.com.
Okay. And it is on the big stage at the Panetta Theater.
Yeah, both weekends. At 7 yeah. p.m.
Okay.
Every day.
Well, that's terrific. Thanks again. Thanks for coming up, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Break a leg, you know, and... I don't know what else to say.
How did that saying come to be?
Did we look this up once?
I actually do know that. So okay. That actually, it is not referring to a body part. It refers to the leg is part of the thing that attaches the curtain to the theater space, as it were. So if you break the leg, you have broken the curtain. Because you've had so many curtain calls and come out for so many additional miles.
Yeah, yes. Very interesting.
Yes.
Up and down so many times. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I gotcha. All right. I think I've heard that before. Well, anyway, we don't want to cost the Panetta any money. So, you know, maybe don't break a leg, but just shy of that, you know, stress it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. With that, again, it's been Tim Bangle, who directed this play, and Steve Hammond, who plays Hercule Poirot. It is Chrissy Hynde's birthday. She was born on this date in 1951, so we're going to play a little Pretenders and then come back. Hopefully we will be connected to our good friend Jim Healy and find out where he is and what he's been up to this past week, because he is still out of town. And you're listening to The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY. Stay tuned for more. And enjoy something from 1980 by the Pretenders.
Got this in pocket. Gunpowder. I'm gonna use it. Intention. Been diving detailed.
You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. It's The Pretenders. It is Chrissy Hynde's birthday today. She was born on this date in 1951. The lead singer and principal songwriter of the English-American rock band The Pretenders. And that track was a number one hit in 1980. And some, you know, plenty of other hits in there. In their wide discography. We have on the phone right now, it's Jack Peterson and Carrie Logan, by the way, here on the KRFY Morning Show. We just said good morning and good day and goodbye to Tim Bangle and Steve Hammond from Murder on the Orient Express. And we're back with our good friend from far away, Mr. Jim Healy. Good morning, Jim. Can you hear me?
You bet I can. Good morning, Jack, and good morning, Carrie, from San Francisco.
Oh, good morning. How is it down there today?
Well, it's overcast. It's been a familiar pattern for the last week. Overcast in the morning, then it burns off by late morning, and then it's sunny. Highs in the upper 60s, lower 70s, and then coolness moves in at night.
It's not too dissimilar from what we've got up here. Kind of chilly autumn weather. But I guess that's normal for San Francisco.
Yeah, but there's a difference. You know, today I'm going to talk about bookstores and movies that I have seen. Part of the joys of coming down to, you know, a big city, but particularly San Francisco, wonderful opportunities that living in a small town of 8,000 has many other opportunities. But certainly I have been indulging myself here.
Well, tell us what you've been up to then. What has the week held for you since last we spoke?
Well, I've scoured bookstores. I've been to Green Apple Books in the Richmond District, Fabulosa Books in the Castro. Has a great T-shirt, the attack of the 50-foot woman, you know, in blazing Barbie pink attacking the bookstore. Just wonderful image. Folio Books in Noe Valley, and then, of course, the legendary City Lights bookstore in North Beach that was co-founded by Lawrence Ferlinghetti in 1953, and then he bought out his partner, and in 1956, they published the iconic Allen Ginsberg's poem called Howl.
Oh.
Are these names?
That's what I've been doing.
Are any of these names, landmarks, familiar to you, Carrie?
City Lights is, and Allen Ginsberg. The rest is new for me.
Which of those many bookstores was your favorite, Jim?
Well, I am here on vacation, I don't want to lug books back. So what I have been doing is sending them back to Sandpoint. All of these bookstores have, by mailing things at book rate, media mail, I can buy without limit. And so probably Green Apple Books. I sent back a good chunk of poundage there back to Sandpoint of different books. So I've been doing damage to my wallet in all of them.
So you mentioned that you'd seen some movies. What was on your menu there?
I've only seen movies, two movies. The sadness about movie going here in San Francisco is that they have shut down many of the small theater venues that showed independent, foreign, small budget movies. So, you know, you're dependent upon, like, I went and saw Barbie at the AMC Metreon, a big, big theater. And have you guys seen Barbie?
I have not.
Not I. No,
I'm going to go back and see it a second time.
It's certainly on my list of films to see, but yeah.
It should be on everybody's list. I'm not going to say much about it outside of the fact that it's not what I expected.
Okay. But you liked it. You're going to go back and see it a second time.
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like you stop and think of other movies, let's say, the Marvel movies or the movies of Batman and Superman. You've got a whole story there already, you know, that Superman comes from Krypton and all these different things. But with Barbie, you stop and think of, what's the story behind Barbie? What does Barbie do? Okay, she's a doll.
Mm-hmm.
But is there any, like, where was she born? Where was she raised? All these different things. And this is, you walk into it with a very, unless you were raised with a Barbie doll or a Ken doll, very little to a world that they come from. And this is what the movie explores. What is Barbie and what role does she play? And really fascinating. I don't know if it all holds together, but I loved it. And I'm going to go back a second time.
Okay.
I was just doing a quick glance through the reader to see if it's still on out at the movies theater in Ponderay, but I don't find a listing for it. But hopefully it still is here so I can take advantage of there.
Grab Dan and go. Dan will love it as well as you.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is kind of, I mean, that one and Oppenheimer were the big movies of the summer, it seems like to me. Yeah, and that
I have. You mean you're not including the Tom Cruise Final Reckoning Part 1?
I haven't seen that one. Is that one close behind? I think
I don't know.
Yeah.
I do hope to see Oppenheimer. The other movie I caught was in the Marina District at the Presidio Theater. There are still some small theaters, but if it's any indication, I was the only person in the theater for the showing of the Korean movie Past Lives. And that sort of saddened me that in this incredible city with arts and culture everywhere, that I was the only one in the movie theater.
Huh. Well, that is kind of a bummer. And it's that one is getting excellent reviews. I don't know anything about it other than a very, very high scores from the critics. But nobody's going to see it even in San Francisco right now.
Anyway. Yeah, and that saddens me. And it's a combination of the availability of home entertainment and what you can get there, or people still, you know, there's fewer people here wearing masks and with COVID bouncing back. It could be that, I don't know, but it's a very Past Lives is a movie that it's of two childhood friends, and then 12 years later, and then 12 years later, and how their lives unfold. And it's a slow moving movie. There aren't car wrecks or murders or jumping off tall buildings or anything. And it's very nuanced and it's really emotional, and I highly recommend. And I'm going to see if we can't get the Panada Theater to, bring it in for the Global Cinema Series.
Well, there you go.
That's a nice idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the theaters even in San Francisco are closing down, which is a shame to hear.
Like my favorite foreign movie, small budget, a movie theater fix were the five screens at the Embarcadero, and they're all shut down. Yeah. And it's sort of sad, but. You know, what's sad about it is I used to come, one of the major reasons why I would come to San Francisco, besides seeing friends and enjoying this wonderful city, is to catch a lot of movies that I could come back to Sandpoint and say, hey, you got to see, or this is really interesting. But Oppenheimer's on my list, and I'm going to catch that and then Barbie one more time. And, I was hoping to see an Italian film called Eight Mountains, but no luck there. So. Hmm.
I think the whole movie thing is a cultural shift.
I agree.
Precipitated by technology and COVID, and but I think primarily by technology and the lack of senses of community and gathering and all of that, which we see eroded.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, you can sit in your living room and not see Annie and Jack Peterson or Carrie and Dan Logan,
right.
You know, in the movie theater with you. You know, you're sitting, unless you invite them over, of course.
Right.
But it's really that. And then also, I'm a big fan of the big screen. screen. You know, when you sit in your living room and there is the kitchen and there are people moving around and stuff, it's a different kind of experience as opposed to a darkened theater where the screen is bigger than you are and you can't put it on pause and say, I'm going to run out and get another drink or something.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of sad. I grew up loving movies, loving a movie theater that when the lights would dim before the show began, my heart would sort of like go, ooh, that sort of thing. But the other news is the Rolling Stones in October are releasing their first album, and I think of new material in 12 years.
Hey, I saw that somewhere. I didn't know if it was new or if they were doing another kind of combing through the library through the past or whatever, but they're doing new.
It was new album. And there was a YouTube YouTube presentation of it last night associated with Jimmy Fallon or something like that.
Yes, you can go to YouTube and see the from their first release from it called Angry. And, you know, I think it's appropriate that it come out at Halloween. You know, those guys look scary. And, you know, to be quite honest, you know, look at the YouTube video of Angry, and I'd be sort of curious to see your responses to it. But
and I think the drummer is Charlie Watts' son, as I understand. Is that right?
Well,
Charlie Watts' replacement is his son. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I don't know if it's his son, but in the video, it's this rather young woman in a rather interesting leather outfit on the back of a car going down a street in L.A., and the Stones are appearing on billboards, so you never really get the Stones. You see them, you know, like one character on a billboard and then another character on another billboard, and Charlie Watts is in some of the images, which is sort of interesting. Mm. But so, you know, I guess sort of like what they say about, you know, Cher, you know, that, you know, they will continue to survive and move on, you know, and I guess the Stones are.
It's the foundation for a new tour.
Yeah.
Would you go catch the Stones?
Oh, yeah. I've seen them a couple of times. It's a great show.
Would you catch them now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm. Heck yeah.
Okay, Carrie. Live on. But it's been a good week. I guess I have one more Thursday show, and then I'll be back in the studio the following one.
Yeah. Steve Jordan's playing drums, by the way, for the Stones, it looks like, on the new album.
Well, so much for that.
Sorry. Yeah. So.
Yep. But outside of that, another thing is I had a friend here show me how to do my heart on my iPhone, and I've been doing steps, you know, where it counts your steps and you do how many. So I've been trying to do 10,000 steps a day, which is a little over 3 miles.
Oh, good for you.
Walking around, you know. Well, Carrie, you ought to know about all the good restaurants here in San Francisco, and I have not been passing them up, so I need to walk quite a bit off, my dear. So 10,000 steps is my goal every day. After I hang up from you guys, I'm going to hop in the shower, then from the Mission District walk over to the Castro. And so
go.
I ought to get close to, you know, half that amount while walking over there.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So what's new in Sandpoint?
What's new in Sandpoint? It's getting quieter a little bit.
Yep.
Seasons winding down. School has started.
Beautiful weather. Else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a really good feel to town right now.
Mm-hmm.
I love the shoulder seasons.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it is now 9 o'clock, actually, and then
okay.
So we got a split.
Do you queued up the song I want played?
I have, yes.
Okay, you know, Jimmy Buffett passed away on September 1, and this is probably his first big hit, but it opens with heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show come Monday. And, you know, what a songwriter, and gave incredible music for half a decade, and I'm going to miss him. So, you know, when after Bird Note, play Come Monday because it starts off with He's Heading Out to San Francisco.
We will do that. Well, Jim, thanks for reporting in. We look forward to your review of Oppenheimer next week, it sounds like.
You betcha.
All right.
Okay. Carrie, you have a good weekend.
You as well.
Go to Barbie, and you do the same with Annie, Jack.
I think, yeah, we will at some point. I don't know when. We'll get there.
I want to hear your responses next week.
Okay.
Pressure. Okay.
There you go. That's a good assignment.
Have a good one now. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jim. See ya. We are out of time. There's only one important event going on this weekend, folks, and it's tomorrow night, September 8th at 7 o'clock p.m., the Monarch Grind Movie Night at the Panda Theater is at 7 p.m., and it is a fundraiser for that Panda Theater and this radio station, Panhandle Community Radio.
There's also the last Maddox production
at
Farm and Park
with
Headwaters tonight.
Okay, no, that is that's not this weekend. There's no conflict there. So, yeah, that's a good point,
that's
Carrie.
Right.
That should be a lot of fun, actually. The Sandpoint Summer Music finale is tonight, but Monarch Grind Movie Night is tomorrow night. It would be fun to pack the theater for Breaking Away, the motion picture that we are featuring at that time. Plus, there's a drawing for a Atso Wahila carbon gravel bike during intermission in between Breaking Away and a short film by Scott Rulander, a local filmmaker. So that should be pretty cool. And it is in support of, like I said, this radio station, plus is a promotional event for their upcoming race on September 16th, next weekend, the Monarch Grind. Anyway, we got to go. Time for Bird Note, not as eclectic mix. There is a lot more going on in town, but you just have to look it up yourself, I'm afraid. It's
Sandpoint Online or Sandpoint Reader.
There you go. Here we go with a little Bird Note, not as eclectic mix all day long. After that, right after Jimmy Buffett's Come Monday, kicking us off.